It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa Nice guy Scott Siepker will be along in just a few minutes with talk about his latest video, which is a tribute to his father who died of cancer recently. But first, resistance to antibiotics poses a major global threat to public health. That's according to a new report out this week by the World Health Organization, the WHO. It analyzed data from 114 countries and said resistance was happening now, quote, in every region of the world. Joining us now to talk about the implications of this report, Dr. Eli Perencevich. He is a physician. He is a professor of medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in the Department of Internal Medicine and an infectious disease epidemiologist. Dr. Perencevich, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Explain the report a little bit more, the findings, why this matters. Start off with what the report says.
So this was the WHO. It's their first ever attempt to measure the number of infections caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria and other pathogens. So before this, we didn't have a full sense. We knew it was a growing problem, but we weren't able to quantify it. And I think the WHO is really trying to help quantify it so that we know how much to invest or what to target in the future as far as prevention efforts and treatment efforts.
Mm-hmm. Are there any surprises in this report?
I think the surprise is how widespread the problem is. So you kind of think of bacterial infections being resistant in certain areas, but it's a global community. And so I think they said every region, every country is impacted. And so you can't hide from antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Can we put a number of deaths to this problem of in antibiotic resistance?
Yeah, worldwide it was hard. They didn't really try to come up with a number. Earlier last year, the CDC did that in the United States, and they estimated that 2 million Americans are infected by antibiotic-resistant bacteria every year, and perhaps 23,000 patients die of these infections, and an additional 14,000 are impacted by C. diff, Clostridium difficile diarrhea, as far as death. So over 37,000 deaths annually from these pathogens.
Mm-hmm. When we look out broader in the world, we're looking at what types of – let's look at the world and the country.
Yeah.
Let's take the world first of all. What are we most concerned with when we can't – we don't have the tools to fight these diseases?
Yeah, so they looked at a number of pathogens. So ones that we're kind of – most of us are aware of are things like E. coli, causes urinary tract infections and blood infections. That was one of the top pathogens, and it's now resistant to fluoroquinolone antibiotics and third-generation cephalosporin antibiotics. And these were the kind of frontline therapies for patients admitted to the hospital. So perhaps 20 to 40% are now resistant to these antibiotics. Then they talked about Salmonella and Shigella, foodborne illnesses that are now resistant to fluoroquinolone antibiotics. Those are things like ciprofloxacin, Cipro, which you might have heard of. And so we can no longer easily treat those infections. Kind of an ominous one is Neisseria gonorrhea. That's the bacteria that causes gonorrhea. It used to be we could treat it with penicillin years ago and tetracycline. And then the agent of choice now, and before that, fluoroquinolone, ciprofloxacin. The agent of choice now has been ceftriaxone, an intravenous antibiotic. But now gonorrhea is now resistant to that in 10 countries. You can't treat gonorrheal infection. So it's a sexually transmitted disease without easy treatment.
Mm-hmm. When we narrow it down to our country, what are we most concerned with in the United States?
I think the top ones are E. coli that's resistant, Klebsiella. There was a big outbreak at NIH hospitals several years ago it was associated with 50% mortality because it was resistant to all typical available antibiotics. A big one that's we always talk about as a superbug is methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, the MRSA bug, or MRSA. That causes skin and soft tissue infections, bloodstream infections, and is resistant to many types of antibiotics, including penicillins and cephalosporins.
I understand there have been no new antibiotics developed since the 1980s, and that would help this problem, would it not? Why aren't we developing more?
I think it's a complex, and that's true. The first figure in the WHO report, I think the emphasis of what they're trying to jumpstart with this report is new investments in antibiotics and in research. And their first figure showed that there have been no classes since 1987. So that's quite shocking. I think there's an explanation for this. Right around that time, HIV became a major public health problem. And so resources were shifted to, of course, this global pandemic of HIV. And I think WHO and others, the CDC, are hoping quantifying this antibiotic-resistant bacterial threat will lead to more investments in antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. A wake-up call for other things, ways to stop the spread of this resistance, to, I guess, slow it. You can't stop it, can you?
Yeah. It's a constant evolution by the bacteria. So antibiotics were first developed in the 30s, didn't really become prominently used until the 50s and 60s. But as soon as antibiotics are developed, the bacteria develop resistance to them. It's a constant kind of a tug of war. But the problem is we kind of turned off the tap. So we stopped kind of developing antibiotics. And so the bacteria are now getting ahead of us. Other things that we can do are investment in public health infrastructure. We can develop new ways to track and do surveillance. So a lot of smaller hospitals can't detect these resistant bacteria. And so we can miss them and they can spread more easily. And so we need to kind of develop new techniques for detecting them and limiting their spread.
Let's back up a little bit and just have you explain a little bit how you said since the 1950s we've been using antibiotics as tools against bacteria,
mm-hmm.
Mainly. How does it work? How does an antibiotic work?
There are many different classes, so without going into minute detail, but typically the bacteria will invade a part of the body, the skin or the blood or the lungs if you have pneumonia. And the antibiotic will go in and specifically target a part of that bacteria. So penicillins or cephalosporins attack the cell wall and prevent the cell wall from being formed, and it will cause the bacteria to burst. Other antibiotics target parts inside the cell that produce proteins and other things. But all of them basically cause the bacteria to die and allow the immune system to kind of clean up the mess and get you back to health.
Mm-hmm. So when we have a collection of bacteria and we use an antibiotic in it, let's just say there's a small sample, let's say 100 bacteria, you use an antibiotic in it, then you have inevitably some survivors who, just because of the way they are built, they survive the hit by the antibiotic?
That's one way to look at it. The other way is we kind of, when we treat with antibiotics, we get rid of the normal flora that the patient has in their gut and on their skin, and then they're more susceptible to picking up resistant bacteria from others. So this isn't a huge problem in the household because most other people, if you're taking an antibiotic for a skin infection or a urinary tract infection at home, your family members aren't also in antibiotics, so they don't have resistant bacteria. In hospital settings, if you are on an antibiotic, the person next to you might be on an antibiotic and have a resistant bacteria, and it could spread to you. And you're more likely to acquire these bacteria, kind of patient-to-patient spread, if you're on antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. So when I read in the WHO report that it calls, the WHO is calling in this report for better hygiene, access to clean water, for us in the United States, we – by and large, have clean water in most of our communities. But you say this applies most to our hospitals, not to our households.
Yeah. I mean, it is an issue in the community. There are more community infections. But it's true that most of these resistant bacteria, the resistant E. coli, the resistant Klebsiella, the MRSA, Staphylococcus, occur in the hospital. And the biggest risks are from patient-to-patient spread. If healthcare workers don't wash their hands, if the environment in the hospital isn't kept in tip-top shape as far as cleanliness. So focus on hospital in those areas could reduce the spread in hospitals.
When I think of this topic just off the top of my head, I think of things that are in my kitchen or in my bathroom or on the store shelves that we buy, these antibacterial soaps. Is that in any way a contributor? When I use that, do I have some bacteria that are learning how to survive the antibacteria substance in this soap? Is that a part of the problem or not really?
I think there is one class that it is a problem. So for typical soap and water or for the alcohol hand rubs that are becoming much more popular, those are there's no issue with increasing resistance. There are soaps now that we know that they contain triclosan or triclocarban. So those are the antibacterial soaps that you see labeled as such. Those can actually select for resistant bacteria. And so – and they're actually – that triclosan is actually ending up in our water supply and selecting for resistant bacteria. So there's a big push to try to eliminate those from our products.
Mm-hmm. So to sum this up, as we have a couple minutes left, why should we care about this and what can we as individuals do here in Iowa?
So the reason we should care, I guess the first thing is when we treat infections with a first-line agent, so the bacteria is not resistant, these antibiotics are far more effective. They have far less side effects. They can typically be given orally, so you can get a pill and so you can be treated at home. Let's say you have a urinary tract infection and you're a young woman. You could take trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, Bactrim, for 3 days for the infection and be fine, be cured of your urinary tract infection. But now with antibiotic resistance, a large percentage of the E. coli that causes urinary tract infections are resistant to trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, and so Bactrim, and resistant to fluoroquinolones like ciprofloxacin. And therefore, the next line of agents are typically less effective. They're IV antibiotics, so sometimes you have to be admitted to the hospital to treat what should be a simple community infection. They have so they're more expensive. And so it's kind of a shifting paradigm. Treating infections like it's been in the antibiotic era is shifting almost back to the post-antibiotic era when we can't have easy treatments. Mm-hmm. And then just another example of one that wouldn't be in these statistics, one of my kind of favorite patients that I like to remember that was impacted indirectly was a young person in their 40s with hepatitis C cirrhosis. So they had liver failure and they were on the transplant list to get a liver transplant. But in this process, they detected an antibiotic resistant bacteria on them that was resistant to all available antibiotics and was then removed from the transplant list. So never got the transplant and died of their cirrhosis. And now that wouldn't be in the statistics because they didn't actually die of an antibiotic-resistant bacteria. But this is changing how we do transplants, and it may change how we do surgeries in general, or it may change how we do chemotherapy for cancer.
Mm-hmm. So back to the question of what we can do. For instance, if we go to the doctor ourselves with some sort of infection or take our child to the doctor – what is the appropriate question to ask our doctor when we see that an antibiotic has been prescribed?
Yeah. So there are two issues there. So if we had better diagnostics, and this is where we need investment, the doctor would be able to tell you whether you had a virus or a bacteria. And if you had a bacteria, they should give you antibiotics if you had a bacterial pneumonia. And if you had a virus, you shouldn't. So unfortunately, they don't. And so they err on the side of caution. They treat you with antibiotics. But I think that maybe the side of caution is to not treat with antibiotics. And so I think if you go in and there's no definitive bacterial infection, you should ask your doctor, do I really need this for my kid's ear infection or for my cold that's mm-hmm. a virus?
Or can I wait a few days and to see if it gets better its own?
Yeah. So, even if you're leaving on a trip, they could prescribe it and you wouldn't have to take it until a few days if you weren't getting better. So there might be ways to develop that. But that's what our public health systems, and we need to do studies to kind of figure out ways to improve antibiotic prescribing.
Doctor, we have about a minute left. You've been studying MRSA, some other aspects of that. What can you tell us about your own research at this point?
So we're studying, I guess, the trial I'm most excited about, actually, that's ongoing. Maren Schweitzer and Lorene Herwald are doing this trial. We're actually detecting patients with MRSA, methicillin resistant staph aureus, on admission before surgery. And we're able to decolonize them with chlorhexidine and mupirocin. And so before they go to surgery, they get these treatment for 5 days, and they get, if they're known to be MRSA positive, carriers in their nose. And we give them a second antibiotic preoperatively or perioperatively when they're getting their surgery. And this has been shown in our early studies to really cut infections, postoperative infections after cardiac and orthopedic surgery. So I'm really excited about that as a way of preventing these infections.
Okay. Dr. Eli Perencevich, a physician and a professor of medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in the Department of Internal Medicine, and infectious disease epidemiologist. Doctor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.